again, everyone. I'm Brian Dinovellis, and welcome to another episode of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. So, what have we learned after 9 days of college basketball in the Tri-State? UConn is deep. They're talented, but how good are they? We'll find out really soon as they take on number 7 BYU in Boston and number 5 Arizona at home at Gamble, all in the next week. How about St. John's? They're not quite Final Four ready just now, but there's plenty of time to get better, especially on the defensive end, and we know Rick Pitino can get this team ready and Final Four ready, if any coach can. How about Seton Hall? Much better than advertised. Much better. And they have a budding big man who's bursting at the seams. Rutgers. The Scarlet Knights, they're quietly taking care of business in Piscataway. Long gone. Long gone are the bright lights and NBA scouts flocking to Jersey Mike's Arena. And you know what? That's just fine with Steve Peichel. He likes to do work in the dark, as he likes to say, away from the bright lights and the spotlight. And how about NJIT? NJIT, the Highlanders. They are one of the pleasant surprises here in early November, not only in the Tri-State, but in all of college basketball. They've picked up wins over Fordham in the Atlantic 10 and Loyola of Maryland in the Patriot League. The latter coming on a Tuesday night game-winning pull-up jumper by Ari Fulton at the buzzer as NJIT shocked Loyola 64-62. This is how it sounded on ESPN Plus.
Hey, of course it's in his hands. He pulls up. What a bucket by Fulton. He's been the mule, the thoroughbred, pulling this team along through the second half.
What a game, what a finish, and what a start to the 2025-26 season for NJIT. And here to talk about it all and the state of NJIT basketball is the head coach of the Highlanders, Grant Billmeyer. Coach, great to see you. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me, Brian. Really excited. Me and you go back a lot of years, man. So I'm glad we have something exciting to talk about.
Yeah, you know, I remember when you were playing at St. Pat's and then Seton Hall. So we do go back several years, and now you're living through it on the other side. So many questions for you, Coach. First of all, this win, you guys are you've played 3 games, and I know we want to stay the course. I get it. But 2 big road wins early on for a team coming off, you know, some struggles last year at Fordham and at Loyola. That's pretty big early in the season. How about being road warriors in these 2 victories?
Yeah, it's really big. Winning on the road, any level, D1, D2, D3 is hard. It's not always going to be this easy, but I'll take it for now.
So what is this mentality that you guys have? You have, I believe, 11 combined, you know, freshmen and sophomores on your roster.
Thanks for reminding me, Brian.
Well, they're not playing like that, Coach.
No, I know. But you know what me and my AD were talking about? We're always going to be a school. It's probably going to have a younger roster, just kind of with the way college basketball is shaped up right now. But it's a fearless group and a group that doesn't know, you know, how hard it is to win on the road. That's why they keep doing it.
Okay, so I want to get back to the roster in a minute. Let's talk about, you know, the news of the day. You know, tight ball game throughout, and you're gutting it out. And with a minute to go, we'll kind of set the stage, right? Tie game, 62 apiece, and Loyola Maryland has the ball. I guess they missed a shot, but then got their own rebound, had another crack at it, and missed a second opportunity all within the final minute. You guys grab the rebound, race up court, and call timeout with 3.2 seconds left. Side out near your huddle, correct?
Yeah, so, you know, it was a crazy set of circumstances because, you know, the kid from Loyola knocked down my freshman, David Bolden, and He was really close to the rim, and the kid had been playing really well. And when it left it, his hand from the angle it was out, the angle it was at, I thought it was going in. So my plan was to call a timeout and have a length of the court play. When the ball didn't go in and we got the rebound, Jordan Rodgers started pushing it, and I wasn't going to call timeout because I thought he was going to get a good look at the rim. But he actually called a timeout himself, which was smart because the defense was set and the referees weren't, they were going to swallow their whistle at that point.
Right.
And then, the kid Ari Fuller and I played really, had been playing really well, especially in the second half. And, I just, got him on a little down screen and told him, you got 3 seconds, max 2 dribbles, but catch it and try to attack.
Well, it was a first of all, well-designed play. And you have to get the ball in. That's always the hard part, right? Because if he's face guarded, if he's double teamed, he was the man, right? So there's no doubt it was going to Ari Fulton's hands. He had 20 points at that time. So you draw up the play, and take the viewers, take the listeners through that play, where he got the how you got the ball to him, and then he dribbles, I guess, to the left elbow or so, and pulled up and nailed it.
Yeah, so I sent Jordan Rodgers ball side corner just to kind of make sure we had some space. And then when Ari caught it, obviously I knew he was going to go to his left because everyone was kind of on that right side of the court. And then Jeremy Clayville was in that left corner, so the defense had to be honest and they couldn't help. So I just tried to catch it, allow him to catch it, and then just kind of play him some space.
Boy, what a shot, what a moment. Has he ever hit a shot like that? Did you ask him afterward?
I haven't asked him, but that was a pretty big stage that he hit it on last night. So I can't imagine if he did. It was quite like that.
The defense you played on Loyola's first team preseason, first team All Patriot League player, Jacob Theodosio. You held him to 7 points, 2 for 12 from the field, 0 for 7 from three. How did you do it?
We mixed up our pick and roll coverage a lot. We played 3 different pick and roll coverages, red, white, and ice. Red is aggressive, ice is not as aggressive, and ice is trying to send everything to the baseline side. So we tried to mix it up. And when we thought he had one figured out, we moved on to the next. But we practiced playing them 3 different ways.
Well, it worked. It worked. So, your team has struggled offensively in your first couple of years. Certainly last year, you've talked about it, publicly. But it doesn't seem to be struggling this year.
No, I mean it's early on. We're only 3 games in, but the guys have great belief in what we do and in one another.
They have to, especially, in this day and age. So this roster, Grant, I've heard you talk about it. And in this day and age, right? Free agency with no rules. It's not like when you played,
No.
you transferred, you had to sit out a year. Those days are long gone. So how do you, where you are right now, how do you build your roster and try to maintain your roster, knowing that at any given time, right, a Rutgers, a Seton Hall, whoever it is in Iowa can be looking at your players and say, I want Tariq Francis. I want a player on that roster, right? Knowing you don't know how long you're going to keep them, and but you still have to try to win this year and plan for next year. How difficult is that? And what is your philosophy of how to build a roster?
You know what? My wife always tells me, don't get too far ahead of yourself in planning. Like, let's not try to plan out a weekend thing, a month in advance, just because we don't know, what things are going to bring at that time. So I kind of take that philosophy with me into work, and I just recruit for that upcoming season. I don't think you can recruit 2, 3 years in advance and have a depth chart and say, all right, we're looking at our 2028 recruiting class and what we're going to need there. You got to look at what you're going to need in 2026, and then in the spring, you got to be ready to make some adjustments.
Smart man, Grant. Behind, right? Who was it that said behind every smart man is a smarter woman?
Exactly.
You know,
Exactly.
bringing your wife's philosophy into work 24/7. She's in your head, and it's smart though. It's smart.
I agree.
You're gonna have a long marriage, I have a feeling, Grant.
I hope so.
I hope so
We
too.
have two beautiful kids, so I hope it's no other way. Hope she stays with me.
God bless. Well, I think you both have two gems that you found. So, God bless. So, how about the way you built this roster and how you came into this season?
Last year we struggled scoring, and in particular we struggled shooting the basketball. So Coach Messenger, my assistant, he had got a call from a buddy of his that took over for him at Hargrave Military. Say, there's a kid that was just playing at our Invitational from Canada that's nobody was recruiting, that just dropped 40 points. He got the film, he watched it, he showed me the film, and within 10 minutes I said, we need this kid. And then we spent a lot of time going back and forth up to Canada. We were able to get Rocco committed. And then Jeremy Clayville had a great freshman year at St. Francis, PA. Made 61 threes, shot 38%. So we found out he wanted to come home, and that was kind of ironic, because if St. Francis, PA isn't transitioning to D3, then he never leaves there. We never get that call. And then I wanted to be bigger this year. I wanted to have an inside presence. I've known Melvin for a long time. We weren't able to, with our tough academic, getting him into transfer here wasn't able to happen, but we were able to get him into grad school. So I'm excited to get him healthy. Hopefully he'll be back on Saturday, and our fans can see the player that he is. So hopeful to have him back. He wanted to play last night, but just didn't think it was the right move in order to play him, on such short rest, because he had a practice Sunday or Monday. He wanted to go, but I just thought he'd be rusty, and I just wanted to give him another day, but hope to get him back on Saturday.
Yeah, that's Melvin. Is it Ebon Coley from Kansas City, correct?
Originally from France, but attended University of Missouri, Kansas City.
Yeah, who so you get a guy like him and you haven't even been doing it with big men. So I can't wait to see how this, team takes shape when he rounds out into form and you have a space eater there, coach.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I'm excited to see him. Malachi's been playing great minutes. The kid Zach Schurler, a freshman, he came in and he was unbelievable for us last night, and really was a difference maker on defense for us at the end of the game.
So when you get a guy like a Wad you say you saw him in Canada. I mean, it just goes to show you, how much talent there is out there and under the radar, they call, under recruited players that are out there. And I don't know, right place, right time, right film, somebody makes a phone call, whatever it is, and suddenly, you have this hidden gem. How do you explain that?
I think it's just kind of like you got to trust your own eyes. You can't recruit everybody the kids that everybody else is recruiting, because where we're at, we're probably not going to get them. So we got to kind of find the kids that are under the radar and stuck up in the middle of nowhere Canada and haven't been seen much, and try to and when we see what we like, just go all in and try to get them to be a part of the program.
And there are some academic standards at NJIT too,
Oh
it's
yeah, definitely.
so you have that going against you in some ways or going for you, right? Because if you're looking for an engineering or computer programmer or something like that, it's a great fit.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, it's I tell kids, don't get so caught up in the short-term money that they can make, and realizing what a degree from NJIT will do for them the rest of their life.
Awesome. So Grant, you were excited about this team in the preseason. Jerry Carino, does an outstanding job covering college basketball in New Jersey for Asbury Park Press and has his own podcast. Jerry is a good friend of both of ours. I know that you called him up. Jerry tells the story. You called him up and said, texted him and said, "Hey, you got to come see us." So you felt a little something about this team in the preseason.
As coaches, you know what you have in your gym and what kind of season you're going to have before that ball ever goes up for the first time. between the summer and the fall, like you know what you have, and I just felt really good. We have a lot of pieces in this gym, and it's a lot, and it felt a lot different than my first 2 years.
And what has surprised you? All right, so you felt good about the team, but once you get out here and you play the games, you don't know, right? It's early, it's November, you're trying to get this team better for March and peaking in March. So has anything surprised you even more than what you knew in the preseason?
Yeah, the kid David Bolden's really surprised me. Has played well in practice, but for a freshman to go in Atlantic 10, play an Atlantic 10 team, have 18 points, and more importantly, have 7 rebounds on the road in his first game, that really surprised me. That's not easy to do anywhere, especially in Atlantic 10 gym in the first game. But hardworking kid, and he's just kind of taking everything in stride.
Averaging 12.3 points and hitting 7 threes on the season. So he's really scoring for you. Fantastic. So, Grant, who did you play in the preseason this year? You know, we don't hear about these scrimmages. So who did you scrimmage?
We scrimmaged Army and we scrimmaged Merrimack.
Okay. So how did you do in those scrimmages?
We lost both of them. We lost both. And we learned from both. We Army, obviously. Toughness. I mean, there's not much needed to be said. And then Merrimack is, they're a hard team to play against. So I wanted 2 really hard scrimmages to see where our toughness was at. And I knew both those teams would make it really hard for us to score the basketball. So I thought those were 2 really good scrimmages for us.
Great. So what was that locker room like after the game last night? You know, you come off that high. There must have been some celebration in there.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. It was good, man. Great vibes. Great group, man. We're extremely close. They all, from the freshmen that are 18 years old to Melvin, who's a 24-year-old grad senior. They all spent a lot of time together off the court. So it was a great feeling, man, being in that locker room. Just a really connected group right now.
So what are you doing as a coach, right? You could have 9, 10 new players every year, and you get them when they come on campus, I don't know, sometime June, right? And you have limited practices. You're talking about them being connected. My question is, how did this team connect so quickly? What did you do? What did they do that got them connected so quickly?
We try to do a lot of stuff for them, a lot of stuff for them in the summertime, take them to New York City, different team events. But, I always say like the teams that are going to get closer are the teams that plan stuff on their own. And we got a lot of guys here with cars, and I think that helps because, they go in their car and they go different places.
Okay.
So, yeah, they go to the mall, they go hang out together, they go to cookouts, anything you can possibly think of.
Excellent. There's the years of teams developing chemistry over 4 years, that's long gone. How about in this era, Grant? You know, there was such a perception, and there is, right, that you need experience. You need to get players through the transfer portal. And I get that, but not only do you have freshmen contributing and starting and making major contributions at this level? But you're seeing freshmen across the country on top 25 teams making an impact. Did you and your coaches sense that this freshman class was so deep and talented?
We didn't know what to expect. They could be good high school players, but when you get to college, none of that stuff matters. Just like transferring from college to the pros. So we knew they were going to be talented. We knew they were going to help us win games in the future. But you just really don't know until they step foot on campus and you start going through the grind with them every day.
Okay, fantastic. So, Grant, I love the schedule, right? You're scheduling in state, you're scheduling out of state. Cincinnati and Louisville coming up. You know, the next game is against FDU. So, before I get to the big schedule, let's talk about your next opponent and playing going up against Jack Castleberry's team.
Yeah, Jack's Jack's an excellent coach. They had a really tough game this past weekend against St. Peter's. They're down playing the University of Texas tonight. But Jack, he's an excellent coach. He's going to mix it up, do a lot of different things defensively. They got a European kid from Serbia that's very similar to Sandro. He shoots it probably better than him when Sandro was younger in his career, and he's a high level passer and a high IQ player. So I only got a chance to watch one game so far. I'll watch another game after we get off this call, and I'll watch their game tonight. But they're going to be a really tough team to beat, but excited for the opportunity and for our young guys to continue to grow.
Already on to the next opponent. I love it.
Yeah, you got to be. You got to be. It's not football where you get a whole week off to prepare for the next one. It's usually 3 4 days, so it comes quick.
Right. So, how about the rest of the schedule? I'm looking at it now, at Drexel, at Navy, another Patriot League team. I think one of the favorites in that league. And then, a Cincinnati, Louisville trip, down in, Ohio, then to Kentucky, High Point. You're challenging yourself.
Yeah, definitely. I think the biggest thing is, we're going to hit a tough stretch in our schedule really soon. I think the biggest thing is we got to just continue to get better at every possession, every game. Can't get caught up in wins and losses. Obviously, you want to win every game as a coach and a player. That's why you play the game. But you also just have to continue to get better and put yourself in a position to be successful in conference.
Fantastic. Well, Grant, couldn't ask for a better start other than 3-0, but two road wins. You certainly have proven to be battle tested early on, and a little success early on hopefully leads to a lot of success later on. So thanks for coming on the podcast, and always great to see you and talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. I really appreciate it.
All right. Always great to talk to Grant, Jersey guy through and through, doing great things at NJIT. It is a tough place to win. It's a long season, but 2-1 with wins over Fordham and Loyola of Maryland have the Highlanders with hopes, and they still don't have their complete roster yet. So it's going to be a fun season for NJIT, and let's hope they compete as well in January and February and March as they are competing and winning now. All right. Let's go around the tri-state. A lot to talk about. I want to begin with UConn. The Huskies are 3-0. They are playing good basketball. Have they played a gauntlet of a schedule? No, they're building up to that. They beat New Haven in New Haven's first ever D1 basketball game. They whooped up on UMass Lowell, and then they beat up on Columbia. They're winning games like they're supposed to. Have they played a full 40 minutes in every game? No. But let's put things into perspective. I love what I'm seeing out of this backcourt. I love what I'm seeing out of the combination of Silas Demery Jr. and Malachi Smith. Silas Demery Jr. so far is averaging more than 3-to-1 ratio in turnovers to assists. He has 18 assists and only 5 turnovers. If you have a 2-to-1 turnover to assist ratio, that's where you should be. Elite point guards, 2.5. He's more than 3-to-1 assist to turnovers. He only had 5 points in that win against Columbia, but he was very much the floor general with 9 assists. He is an extension of Dan Hurley. Dan Hurley is not an easy coach to play for. It takes a special player. It takes a special point guard to play for him. Hurley's number one priority this offseason was to get a point guard. We love Hassan Diarra, okay? But he is not Tristan Newton. I'm not saying Silas Demery Jr. is Tristan Newton, but he is closer to Tristan Newton than Hassan Diarra was. And Hurley knew in the offseason he had to check the box, right? Maintain, keep the players on his roster, but also, number one priority, get a point guard and get depth at point guard. Malachi Smith is the perfect, number two point guard. He was the man at Dayton, but he wanted to come here, play for Dan Hurley with a chance to win a national championship. And he accepted his role from day one. Will he get some starts this year? Maybe. Silas Demery Jr. is the guy. Okay. And he is off to a great start. He doesn't have to be the leading scorer here. Leave that to Solo Ball and Alex Caravan and Terrace Reed. Speaking of Terrace Reed, what I love that I'm seeing out of him, he's healthy, no issues with the hamstring, and all he's doing is coming in here and scoring and rebounding. He's averaging 19 and a half points and 10 rebounds in two games. Enough said. Solo Ball is doing what he's doing. And Alex Caravan, here's what I notice about Alex Caravan. I think the weight of the world, the weight of the pressure of making himself be the man is off. I think it affected his confidence last year. I think it affected his shooting. His three-point shot was very inconsistent, and toward the latter half of the season, it was poor. I mean, he couldn't buy a three-point shot. He couldn't buy a vowel, okay? What he went through last year, all shooters go through at some point. But I'm seeing a guy who's much more confident in his shot. He's shooting over 60% from three this year. It's a different player. Why? I just think because of what I said. Because he knows he's got talent around him and he's relaxed. He's 8 of 15 from 3. I know it's New Haven, UMass Lowell, and Columbia. But still, that's a great start to his season. Someone who's averaging 17 points. He's hitting almost 3 three-pointers a game. And he's hitting 89% of his free throws. His shot is back. His confidence is back. And that is only great news for the Huskies. And we haven't even seen Braylon Mullins. So when they get Braylon Mullins, then we're going to know more about how this UConn team can be. But the schedule coming up, you know, it's ready to roll up the sleeves. Number 7, BYU. Number 5, Arizona. Number 14, Illinois. Number 25, Kansas. And number 10, Florida, the defending national champs. You know, there's only one team in the country that I think can match that schedule, and that's Alabama, because they just played, you know, number 5, St. John's, and beat them. They have number 1, Purdue, coming to their place. These are two Final Four hopeful teams. These are two teams who expect to contend for a national championship that have went out and not scheduled cupcakes. They scheduled hard and aggressive, and they scheduled big time. So speaking about this Alabama team, boy, what a wagon that team is. Nate Oates has himself a backcourt. Nate Oates just continues to recruit, continues to get guys, and LeBaron Filon and Aiden Holloway they have to be the best backcourt in the SEC, because they certainly look that way right now. LeBaron Filon, you know, he may be a first-team All-American by the time this season is over. We know he's an NBA draft pick. He probably would have went late first round, early second round last year, decided to come back, and if he continues to play like this, he bet on himself. If he continues to play like this, he can make himself into, you know, an early first rounder, a mid to early first round draft pick, maybe a lottery pick. I think he needs to get, you know, put on a little more size, but what he did to St. John's was very impressive. Okay. These guards were going downhill, and no matter what St. John's did, they could not slow them down. They couldn't stop them. They scored 53 points in the half, 108 points in the game. That hasn't happened to Rick Pitino since he's been here at St. John's. The last time it happened was against Creighton when Mike Anderson was the coach 3 years ago. So St. John's needs to get better defensively. I don't know if any team could have stopped Alabama the way they were playing at the Garden. Here's the man himself, Rick Pitino, and his thoughts after the game.
They were a better basketball team than us tonight. we could not guard them off the dribble. Very few teams can. They've got excellent offensive talent. We learned a lot tonight. Disappointed we lost, but we certainly learned a lot, and we'll get better from it. And we were quick shooting a lot, not letting them have to play defense. And then we flipped it at the other end, and we couldn't guard them off the bounce. So our guards didn't play particularly well tonight, but that's because they have great guards. It wasn't anything the guys did offensively except try to play too much like Alabama. It was, we lost this game at the defensive end. When we told them that Alabama doesn't lose many games when you don't turn them over more than you turn the ball over. And tonight it was 7 versus 12. Obviously it's 33-18 from the three-point line, but you have to turn them over in order to beat them, and we couldn't do it tonight. They're tough to guard one-on-one, and we didn't do a good job of it. We didn't do a good job of their slip pick and rolls, but they're tough to guard. They really are. You know, they just played a great team second game of the season. That's really what it comes down to. Look, we had 18 assists. We scored 96 points, and they scored 103. So you're not going to – when you give up 103 points, you're not going to win. We don't have the ability to score 106-103. I think their guards are some of the better guards in the country. Really tough to guard. Really tough to guard. How defense is so important. This team can make you look bad in the open court, and they did at times. But I'll say this. They're tough to guard. There's no lateral quickness statements here. They're tough to guard.
So there you go. It wasn't about lateral quickness. It was just this team was better on this day. And that's exactly what I said after the game. Alabama was better on this day. If they play each other again in March, if both teams are fortunate to get to that point where they play each other, Sweet 16, Elite 8, something like that, we'll see where both teams are at then. But clearly, St. John's needs to get better. We know they can score, okay? They have to figure out who's handling the ball for this team, because it's not Ian Jackson. That ship has sailed. Could it be Ozaiah Sellers? Maybe. But the guy who you're relying on to be your point guard wasn't playing in this game. Dylan Darling played very well against Quinnipiac. But what I'm trying to say is that if you're relying on Dylan Darling, the Big Sky Player of the Year, to be your starting point guard and get you through the entire season, I don't know if it's going to work. We'll see. I like what I saw against Quinnipiac. I wish we could have saw him against Alabama, but it's clear. Rick Pitino playing positionless basketball. I never bought into it. This isn't the NBA. You know, you don't have LeBron James, Luka Doncic, these all-time players, you know, coming up, bringing the ball up the court. They're not on this roster. This is college basketball. And even in 2025, you need a point guard. Dan Hurley knows that. Shaheen Holloway knows that. That's why they went out and got them. Rick Pitino knows that. He does, deep down. But this idea of positionless basketball, I don't buy into it. Prove me wrong. They tried to turn Ian Jackson into a point guard. He's not a point guard. He's a guy who needs to get the ball on the wing and go downhill. He can shoot the three, but he's not comfortable facilitating the offense. That is clear. Could it be Ozaiah Sellers? Maybe. Could it be Josan Sanin? It's going to be by committee. Or could it be Dylan Darling? That's what it's going to have to be. But without a major, big-time starting point guard, it's kind of like having two goaltenders in hockey. When you have two goaltenders, you really don't have a number one goaltender. They don't have a number one point guard, so they're going to have to try to figure it out. So defense, three-point shooting, they need to work on both, because at some point you need to knock down threes. And that was their Achilles heel last year. It was not a good offensive team. It was an elite defensive team. They couldn't shoot threes. I think this team will shoot the three better than last year's. I just don't know how much better. And Zubi Ejiofor, take a bow. I know you wanted to win that game, but 27 points, 10 rebounds, national television, you are the man. They need to find a way to compliment him. I like what I saw out of Bryce Hopkins with 19 points. He did his damage in the first half. He looked good. Will he be able to do it, for 40 minutes? I'd like to see him out there for 30 minutes a game, and see what he can do. Time will tell with him, but clearly both big men had great games. The guards were overmatched by Alabama. We'll see what St. John's does moving forward. Keeping it in the Big East, let's go to Seton Hall. The Pirates are better than advertised, simple and plain, okay? They've won three games, albeit against St. Peter's, a blowout. Wagner, they struggled, pulled away late. And then Fairfield, a good Fairfield team, okay? Chris Casey has a good team. And 82-59 is an impressive win for Seton Hall. All right, I'm not putting this team in the NCAA tournament. No way, shape, or form. But, Fairfield has a guy in Braden Sparks who's just put up numbers. He's averaging 20 points a game in three games for the Stags. And he was impressive hitting the three, and Rodriguez was impressive hitting the three. But outside of that, they got manhandled by a bigger Big East team, is what happened. And where do we begin with this Seton Hall team? Let's begin with Najai Hines, because Seton Hall has really found an outstanding big man. People are comparing him to Angel Delgado, and I get it. I get it because Seton Hall big man, one of the best Seton Hall big men ever, the Big East all-time leading rebounder. All right. He's not the rebounder that Delgado was. Very few are. Okay. But he's more skilled offensively than Angel Delgado was at this stage. I compare him more to Adama Sanogo from UConn, who was a finalist. For Seton Hall was a finalist for him. It came down to Seton Hall and UConn, and UConn came in at the last minute and grabbed him away. I watched his career very closely at UConn. And coming in, he was a player who was very skilled offensively, down low in the blocks, a prototypical big man who, is not going to pull you 15 feet away from the rim. Old school, low block. Offensive skill set for a big man. That's what I see in Najai Hines. And you're getting a guy who's just beginning to learn how to play college basketball. I think he had 12 and 8 against St. Peter's, got into foul trouble against Wagner, and then 10 and 10, his first career double-double against Fairfield. Very impressive. He is on the path to Big East. First team or Big East all rookie team. All right. Who's going to be the leading scorer of this team? That is the question. That's the million-dollar question. I think when the dust settles, I think you saw AJ Staton-McRae having a breakout game. They brought him in here to score. He hadn't scored the first two games. 13 points, hit 3 of 4 from three. What I liked after the game is his leadership came out. Staton-McRae, it was revealed in the post game that after the Wagner win, Seton Hall was not feeling good about the win. They didn't play well, but they got the win. He had the group text, the group chat with his teammates and said, "Hey guys, let's put our egos aside. And it doesn't matter who leads this team in scoring, because any one of us can lead this team in scoring on any given night. Don't worry about points. Don't worry about your stats. Let's worry about winning. Let's play together, and all that stuff will take care of itself." That was the message. And that's being a leader. And that's what Seton Hall needs. It needs leaders. It needs guys to pull this team together, because there's a lot of new faces here, right? Only two returning players with any type of experience. And it looks like, we don't know when God's will Ariarian is coming back. And it looks like we could be fearing the worst for Jasim Felton As of this podcast, we don't know how serious his injury is, but it doesn't look good. So now you're taking away both players, the only two players who had any significant playing time last year for Shaheen Holloway. So everybody is new. So who's going to be the leader? Looks like AJ Staten McCray. I love what I'm seeing out of Bud Clark. The comparison I draw is sure, it's easy to say he reminds you of Shaheen Holloway. I think he reminds me more of Andre Barrett. Either way, that's high praise. And I say Andre Barrett because as fast as Shaheen Holloway was with the ball in his hands, the way Andre Barrett moved with the basketball up the court, as fast as he was with the ball, I see that with Bud Clark. He is so fast. He still needs to learn what it's like to play at this level, and he'll learn that moving forward, especially, you know, when they go out to Maui. But he's been a little up and down with his point total. I'm not worried about that. He needs to be a distributor, a facilitator. He's doing exactly what Shaheen Holloway wants. He would have more assists if guys could hit open shots. Okay, let's face it. Seton Hall, what concerns me about them is what concerned me about them last year. Their inability to hit threes. They only hit five in this game, and their opponents are hitting way more than them. Their opponents are hitting 38% from three. That is not good. Teams are coming into their building, notorious for their defense. St. Peter's, Wagner, they're out shooting Seton Hall from three. That is a major concern. So they need to improve that moving forward. Their defense from three and their offense from three. But I like what I see from this team. Better than advertised so far. All right, let's go to Rutgers. Rutgers is doing exactly what they need to do. Two games, two wins, albeit two teams who are at the bottom of their conference, Maine and Rider. But you know what? They're winning these games, folks, okay? So where do we begin? Let's begin with Dylan Grant. He is developing into the man on this team, okay? Slowly but surely, the sophomore is becoming the most talented player on this team. It's clear. They feed off his energy. He's an energy guy. He had his first double-double with 10 points and 10 rebounds, and that's only the beginning for him. He is just scratching the surface. Steve Peichel said in his post-game press conference, man, I knew what this guy could do. He only had 1 point at halftime, and I got on him at halftime, and I challenged him. And all he did in the second half was go for 10 points and 9 rebounds. The guy had 1 rebound and 0 points in the first half and did all his damage in the second half. Message received, coach. Message received. Tariq Francis, I like his scoring ability. I don't like the fact he was 2 for 7 in this game. He had a much better game his first game against Ryder with 20 points. But it's clear this kid belongs. If you can score, you can score. This kid can score. Jamichael Davis is taking care of the basketball. He looks really good in his first two games. He looks like a leader as well. So I think the heart and soul of this team are those three players. I think in a two-game sample, those are your three players who you're really going to lean on this year. Francis, Davis, and Grant. The rest of the team, we don't know. That's the problem, all right? Where are your fourth and fifth scoring options? Where do guys fall into place? We saw Dennis Badalo, the kid from Romania, have a breakout game. This is why Pico went out and got him to shoot the basketball. Had an unbelievable first half. 19 threes. Yeah, right. That would be unbelievable. That would be historic. 19 points, 4 for 5 from three, all in the first half. But then the freshman Woes, he disappeared in the second half. 0 for 3 from three, 0 points. But you saw what this kid is capable. You saw what he's capable of doing. And Haroun Zernot, the other import from Europe, I think he's more of a work in progress. So Battle O is more ready. Zerno, the other import, needs more work. But Battle O could be the fourth option. After that, it's a coin flip. This team just isn't deep. It's clear. The depth is not there. What concerns me about Rutgers is they don't have enough good players. I don't know if there's a great player. It could be Dylan Grant. There's not enough good players. There's not enough depth. And there's a big donut, a huge donut at center. Bayfall is not, he's not a basketball player. I don't know who makes these rankings. Three teams in 3 years, three major programs in 3 years, and Bayfall, whoever made those rankings on him should lose their job, okay? Should lose their job. It was all on potential. But Emmanuel Agboole, I've seen enough out of him at his time at Rutgers to just know that it is who he is. You know, he needs to bang. He needs to get rebounds, putbacks, you know, an occasional dunk. That's all you're going to get out of Agboole. And if you can get, I don't know, 5-6 points and 7 rebounds a game, sign me up for that. I don't even know if you can get that out of him when it's all said and done. So Rutgers, just keep winning these games that you're supposed to win. Okay, American could be a tough game coming up. Central Connecticut, oh, by the way, shocked Boston College. That's no longer a gimme. And we'll talk about the Blue Devils in a minute. But Rutgers, just take care of business. Try to get undefeated going into Vegas. And that's exactly what Rutgers fans can hope for at this point, because the center position is not looking promising. All right, where else do we go from there? I want to talk about Central Connecticut, because for the first time in the history of Central Connecticut men's basketball, they have beaten Boston College. What a moment that was for Patrick Sellers. What a moment that was for the Blue Devils. In the past 2 years, Central has now beaten Boston College, UMass, St. Joe's, Fordham. Hard hitting New Britain. Put another notch in Patrick Sellers' belt. Giant killers. Where this puts this team at the end of the year, we don't know, but they will compete. Okay. This is impressive. This is impressive that Central Connecticut has put itself in position to beat programs like this, programs with storied pasts, programs with NCAA tournament appearances. Boston College, UMass, St. Joe's, Fordham. They're no fluke. They almost beat Providence last year. So they go up to Conte Forum. They had never beaten Boston College before. And Central Connecticut was down one with the ball in the final seconds of this game. Darren Smith Jr. drove the lane and hit a driving layup with 3 seconds left to propel Central Connecticut to an unthinkable victory. Never in a million years. All right. I grew up in Connecticut. If you know me by now, I grew up in Hartford. I have so many family members, my brother, my sister, my cousins, my brother-in-law went to Central Connecticut. More than UConn, less than UConn. But no, I'm just going to say it. More than UConn growing up, I probably went to Central Connecticut games more so because they were easy to get to, they were cheap, and it was college basketball. So I've seen this program in the 80s and into the 90s as a teenager and a young adult. You know, I remember guys like Johnny Kidd and Tyrone Canino, and yes, Patrick Sellers, who played there. So I know where this program came from, and never in a million years did I ever think that they could even compete with Boston College. I mean, that would be unthinkable. All the great years that Boston College has had. I went back and I looked at the success of Boston College, and I mean, when they were in the Big East from 79 to 2005, they went to 11 NCAA tournaments. You know, in the 80s, they were kings of the Big East. Danye Abrams and Michael Adams and Jay Murphy and on and on and on. Craig Smith in the later years, right? Bill Curley and Malcolm Huckabee and Howard Eisley. Dudes, to think that this one proud program is where they are now. There were probably 1,000 people in that building. Embarrassing for Boston College. Since they've moved to the ACC in 2005, 2006, they've only made three NCAA tournaments, and they came early on. 2006, that first year, that was a Big East roster. Then they went again in 2007. They haven't been to the NCAA tournament since 2009. You think their fans missed the Big East when they were competing every year and they made 11 NCAA tournaments? Wow. That is to take nothing away, okay? That is to take nothing away from what Central Connecticut did. But Central will compete in this conference. Patrick Sellers continues to get another notch on his belt. Darren Smith Jr. had a heck of a game. Melo Sanchez, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, had 17 points in that game. This team was coming off a blowout, and I mean a blowout against Quinnipiac. That was never even a game. And they regrouped. That game was 71 to 49. And they regrouped, and there's no way anyone thought they could beat Boston College, but yet they did. So Patrick Sellers and company, hats off to you guys. Hats off. And that'll do it. That is around the tri-state. Keep an eye out on Iona. I haven't forgotten about the Gaels. Dan Geryea and company, they have won two games. They had a huge win at Missouri, Kansas City. They had a big time win against Hofstra. They have Fordham coming up. Maybe Iona is back in the New York groove, and maybe Iona is a team that, you know, will once again shine in the MAC. Because when you go to Missouri, Kansas City, and you put up 105 points and you beat Hofstra, you know, a team who's always contending in the CAA, keep an eye out for the Gaels. They have Fordham coming up. They should be able to take care of business against a Rams team that also won at the buzzer. Okay, near DeJure Reeves hit a game winner in their game as Fordham came away with a win at home in nice fashion. Okay, so hats off to them beating Wagner. But honestly, Iona looks better than Fordham right now. So they have Fordham, they have Princeton. If they could ever win that game against Princeton, look out. That's all I'm saying. Look out. So, what a week it's been. What a first 9 days it's been. I want to thank my sponsor, Mike Supa of RE/MAX Revolution. If you're looking to buy or sell a home down the Jersey Shore in Monmouth or Ocean Counties, give Mike a call, 201-988-2577. Tell him that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for sharing the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Until next time, enjoy the games, everyone. I'm Brian DeNovellis. So long.